This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Nuga. It has been an interesting last couple weeks in the world, and I really wanted to highlight some young African American wrestlers on my show. I felt it was only right. Strongly believe in the Black Lives Matter movement, and I figured I had a forum here and wanted to highlight some of the real up-and-coming African-American wrestlers on the scene. And one of those guys I've seen around at a lot of shows, and is a hell of a talent, part of a great tag team called the Gymnasty Boys, and was a hell of a singles wrestler in his day as well, is Timmy Lou Retton. Timmy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Man, you're just a pile of muscle there, and a hell of an entertainer as well. What made you fall in love with wrestling?
It was actually my grandfather. He was a big fan of wrestling. He got me in front of it when I was four. We would always watch wrestling every Saturday morning. And what sealed my fate was my grandfather got a tape, and it was actually WCW. It was a Halloween Havoc. It was a match between Davey Boy Smith and Steven Regal for the television title. And the match was so amazing. It had me hooked right there. So I've been a fan ever since I was four.
And you grew up in the Carolinas, right?
Yes, sir. Born and raised in Raleigh, North Carolina.
So, yeah, you were definitely in WCW country.
Yes, sir. Yes, I was.
So who were your guys growing up? Who were your main influences? You know, you're watching every Saturday morning. I was, too. I was raised in Boston, so I was in WWF country. So I had probably different influences than you, but you know, Saturday morning, that was a tradition, man. You were just plopping in front of the television. You know, it was appointment viewing. Who were your guys?
I would have to say my top guys would have been Brian Pillman, Two Cold Scorpio. Reverse that. Two Cold Scorpio was first. Brian Pillman, Thunder Liger when he was there. I was a big cruiserweight guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like I would be able, because I was doing that already as a kid, just jumping from chair to chair to the floor or to my sisters. But I just felt like I went better with them than everybody.
Now, Two Cold Scorpio, that's not a name that comes up as often as he should. What was it about Scorpio that really spoke to you?
Mainly the fact that he was doing all these crazy moves that I saw people in my neighborhood could do. I was like, back to my life. We would just flip for days, just going like we could flip for miles, have flip contests. And I would watch wrestling. I saw him. And the first time I seen him do a 450, I lost it because I was literally doing that off my fence. But I would just land on my feet. And then when I saw him do another rotation, in my head, I never would have fathomed that. And he was doing things way before everybody hit. Some of your favorite cruiserweights or your favorite high flyers are influenced by him. And the fact that he is not in the Hall of Fame, he is not a legend, is blasphemy to me.
Yeah, he was at Scenic City a couple years back, and he still got it, man. Like, he's still got it to this day.
I had the pleasure of wrestling him at AML, and when I tell you he still has it, From the showmanship to the moves to the strikes, he will knock you out with no hesitation and dance while he does it.
Did he lay it on you too? Because like he crushed AJ Gray. He absolutely crushed AJ Gray.
If he was an inch from my head, I don't know if I'd be talking to you. Because he loves you, but at the same time, he's out there to win. So there's no, hey, nephew, let's go out there and have fun. I was like, no, we're going to deliver, and I'm going to bush it. Are we allowed to curse?
Cause Please do. Fucking say whatever you want.
I'm going to charge myself not to.
Okay.
He will bust your head wide open. He does not care, male, female, non-binary. He is there to compete.
And he is, like, he was, at least when I met him, he was a ridiculously nice guy, too. Very gracious to the fans. Like, willing to meet anybody, talk to anybody. Like, no, I mean, he just really went out of his way. Like, I talked to some of the promoters that they said he couldn't have been a nicer guy. Like, I mean, he seemed to get it.
He's just a professional. He understands wrestling. He understands the whole aspect of it. Like, being kind to, no matter where you are in the car, even on the car, you're just being respectful, being nice. Because, like, here's the thing. Outside of wrestling, we all have a crazy life. We all have all these things coming against us, going against us, bills, coronavirus, all this stuff. And the one thing that we have in common is wrestling, no matter what. So why would I come in a safe zone and cause havoc, be a menace and something to where it's common ground to where we use this as our safe zone, as places where we can escape all this.
That may be the smartest thing said on my podcast in 45 episodes, Timmy. Thank you.
No problem.
Seriously. Thank you. Thank you. I've been trying to preach that message for years, man. Thank you.
No, it was like, I've seen, like, I love wrestling. I love wrestling all my heart. And is there bad in it? Yes. But nobody gave me my love for wrestling, so I will never let anyone take it from me. But in the same things, like, if we're all the same, if we're on a team, this is essentially a team. It's not like the 80s or the 70s or the 60s or 50s where everyone's trying to protect their, or I got to do what I got to do. No, it's like everyone can be successful, everyone can be happy, everyone can be in wrestling. It's just the egos, is just people feel like they have to be bad people to get what they need to do. That's not how it is anymore. It shouldn't have been that way, but it shouldn't. I don't want it that way now, going forward.
Now, you also grew up in gymnastics. Talk about that life, because that is a very, in some ways, a different life of wrestling, and maybe it's a similar life of wrestling, too.
Yes, actually, back when I say when I was 8, I was doing flips around the neighborhood, and my mom saw that, and she didn't want me to be a part of, like, the other activities after school, so she put me into gymnastics, and I'm not going to lie, most people in my neighborhood picked on me. They picked on me really hard, because it's something that they never understood. It's not really anything that we thought was allowed to us. So I had to deal with that. But seeing how other kids would participate in gymnastics or the competitiveness, it was the same thing as me going out and flipping against my cousins. It was just, I didn't know them, and it was more forbidden. But I say during middle school, high school, that's when I started to transition from gymnastics into wrestling.
Now, I got to ask, because you don't see a lot of African-American faces in the world of gymnastics. Did you stick out? Did it feel weird? Or was it, were you welcomed? Was it
green thumb?
The what?
And there was times where I didn't want to go. There was like 1 year I said I was 13. I didn't do it. It was more AAU, but
Timmy, can we cut this part? You're cutting out a little bit.
Can we cut that part, please?
Oh, I didn't hear you. Cut out a little bit.
Oh no, it was just a little emotional. Can we cut that part?
Sure, definitely.
But yeah, there were days where I didn't want to do it, because most of the time people don't see a kid like you doing what they're normally doing it, sometimes even better. So there was some discrimination. I was discriminated against, but I know the time I had in gymnastics was vital to me because it helped with my wrestling greatly.
So wrestling was always the true love then?
Yes.
Was gymnastics always done with the idea that wrestling was going to be the goal? Or did you always know when you were a kid, I'm going to be a wrestler?
Oh, I knew for a fact. I didn't know how I was going to get there. I just knew I was going to be a wrestler. Gymnastics helped me stay out of trouble. It helped me work my flexibility, helped me learn different avenues and different outlets to express myself.
Sure.
And I always appreciate my time there. But yeah, I feel like wrestling was always the goal once I saw it.
Now, at what point did you decide to train in wrestling? Because, did you get in really, really early, or did your parents, make you, go do school first and then go to wrestling, or did you just jump right in the second you got out of school?
I actually jumped into wrestling in high school. The first year, I actually thought it was the same thing as what I saw on TV. So I had a horrible record. Bad.
Oh, you did amateur wrestling?
Yes, I did amateur wrestling.
Oh, sure, sure. High
school. And me thinking, oh, I can do the moves on TV. That wasn't the case at all. I would get points taken away from me. I remember one time I tried to do a schoolboy. And I got caught. And my coach stood up and looked at me. He was like, what was that? I was like, I saw a Ring of Honor one. That's how I got named Mr. Hollywood, because I was always trying to do flashy moves. But once I got out of high school, it was a long period before I actually got in. I didn't get into wrestling until I was 25.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I was doing everything else. I was an electrical assistant. I was working for the post office. I was working for the UPS. I was a gymnast instructor for 7 years. A lot of things were happening between that time. It was actually my ex-girlfriend at the time. She had gave me ultimatum. She was like, well, you're 25 now, Tim. So I kind of want to make a deal with you. She was like, if you're not in wrestling by 27, you got to find something else because you're just not doing anything. And she was right. I wasn't trying to pursue. I was just watching and saying, man, one day I'm going to do it. But I wasn't really applying myself for it. One day, I just got on the internet and I Googled wrestling around me. And I saw a company called Gouge Wrestling. I went down there and I met a wrestler named Seymour Snot.
Seymour Snot?
Yes.
That's a hell of a wrestling name.
Yes, it is. And he has a hell of a training because he was trained in APW in California.
And Roland Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Training with guys like Bison Smith, Crash Holly, Michael Modest, wrestling with guys around guys like John Cena, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, just some of the best talent coming out of California.
Sure. And
I was able to get in contact with Seymour. He trained me, and to this day, I could never repay him because I always find it funny when I tell people that I was trained, like people around our area know of him, but he's very heavy on his gimmick. He's the geek with the physique and has a hell of a body. And people realize that his gimmick lasts more than actually wrestling because wrestling hurts sometimes. And when I tell people I was trained by him, they're very shocked because my style of wrestling and his style of wrestling are two very different things, but he can actually go. That's the beautiful thing. People don't know. And I say I was training with him down in North Carolina for about 6-7 months before I had my first match. It was against him. Say it was February 22nd. 2014. Fitness.
Just cut out there for a second. It was February when?
February 22nd, 2014.
Oh, okay, sure. So 6 years ago, yeah. Just had your sixth anniversary. So did you start traveling immediately, or did you just pretty much stay in North Carolina, or what did Seymour teach you about traveling?
He taught me the ins and outs of the road, mostly just how to be a good travel partner, how to keep my eyes and ears on the road, being respectful. I traveled with Seymour for about another 7 months before he trusted me enough to go on my own. Excuse me. During those times, I was just making a name for myself. I would wrestle an opening match.
Were you
I'd
always
referee.
Timmy Lou Retton?
Yes.
You always been Timmy Lou Retton.
Yes, and it's a funny story about that. I didn't come up with the name. It was actually a guy. It was with Seymour. I was setting up the ring. I was on the top rope, and I did a moonsault off. And I landed on my feet, and he came in. Mickey Gambino came in, and he had said, damn, Timmy Lou Retton, what's with all the flips? And Seymour looked at him and then looked at me, and I was like, no. Yep. Timmy Lou Retton, because Gouge is a very gimmick-based promotion down in North Carolina. And at the time, I didn't have a gimmick. So once that happened, he said Timmy Lou Retton. It was full sail from there.
But you've come to embrace it, though. You've come to really embrace the gimmick.
Yeah, it was fun. It was very fun. It helped me learn how to be gentleman. It was like, because I knew how to wrestle, but I was very shy and very timid. With being elegant, gymnastic Timmy Lou Retton, I was able to be goofy, be silly, and not really fester on what people thought about it, because I was like, it's the gimmick. It's not me. It's the gimmick. So with all that happening, I was able to be more free about it, and it was fun. I miss it.
I mean, so you've worked singles and now you're working a tag. What is the philosophy difference between the two?
It's the storytelling. It's more so, I always put wrestling in aspects of life, and I always thought where people harp on a different style of wrestling, I always thought it was funny. It was like tag team wrestling has its own. It's a different style. Single is a different style. Hardcore, technical, lucha libre, women's wrestling, that's a different style. And once people get that head, that it's a different style, so people have their fans of different style. There's no need to harp or write on different things. Like, what you like is what you like, but I'll never, if it's not for me, it's not for me.
So you worked singles for the first, because you've been with Mike for how long now? 2-3 years?
Coming on, it's 2.5 years, yes.
So you worked singles for the first 3 years of your career. What did you learn from that experience? What are some of the highlights of your singles career?
I say the highlight and what I've learned most, it was basically storytelling and different parts of where I was wrestling. Because once I got out to travel, I was seeing different things. What worked for Ohio didn't work in Tennessee. So I had to learn the craft of what area I was wrestling.
That makes sense.
One night I was in Tennessee, and I had a great match. But I had to go directly to Ohio the next night. And I'm like, okay, maybe we can do the same thing. We go to Ohio, and I try that. And they eat me a lot because Ohio, they like fast pace. They love hard hitting wrestling more so down south. Tennessee is more walk, talk, hey brother, I'm light here. It's more so storytelling, more just more working. So you have to learn where to turn up and where not. I learned that.
Makes complete sense, yeah.
I say with also in the singles, just booking wise, how people would treat you in different ways. It's like, all right, I can come in as a single, but sometimes it was damaging me because most people want to see me and my, or vice versa. And when I first started, I didn't really have a name, so I could not pitch people to come along with me or guys that I knew, because I was still trying to get in myself. So it's more so knowing when to pitch your put your name out for somebody, and knowing that they're gonna not damage your name.
That makes sense. So at what point did you meet the famous / infamous White Mike, and at what point did you decide, hey, I want to take on, because there's not many tag teams on the indies, and you guys really stick out. You're probably the most entertaining tag team, and technically one of the better tag teams on the indies. And at what point do you decide, hey, I want to make this career change and become part of a tag team?
I met White Mike a couple of years ago, when I first met, I met him down at PWX when I was wrestling. He was in the crowd, and he came up to me. They really appreciated my work. And at the time, I didn't know he wrestled. But I would meet him again here and often, like different shows. And he was just so funny. He would take the most smallest thing and make it the main event, like a chapstick. He could take a chapstick and work chapstick to where you thought the chapstick was going to beat him. And stuff like that, people overlook so much. And that's what makes a wrestler, that makes a match, that makes other wrestlers. And I became a fan of his because I was wrestling one of the Ugly Ducklings, Rob Killjoy, when he was a single. And we had wrestled a couple times before then. We wrestled that night, and we had to wrestle in my main. Mike was in Triple Threat, but we came out and they gave us an ovation. And then Mike was like, well, how the hell am I follow this? And I'm not gonna lie, the match wasn't the best, but he made the absolute best out of it. He went out and just started talking to the crowd. It was like, shut up, mama, give me a dollar. And she gave him a dollar. He walked around with just strutting and just talking, and he made a killing. And I'm just like, he has not bumped. He has not. And I was just in awe of him. So he was also a close friend with Rob Killjoy. He invited me and Mike to ride with him and Lance to show while we were booked all together. So me and Mike were sitting in the back, just see how we were about life and with wrestling. And while all that happened, we got closer. And one night we was in Tennessee for NWA Smoky Mountain. It's called Innovate Now. But it was a small locker room. In the locker room, it had the Ugly Duck. It had the Heat Seekers. And it had my favorite tag team, Nick Iggy and Kerry Awful.
I love those boys.
Yes, yes. They was doing a podcast and was talking about the importance of tag team wrestling. And they was I was very fortunate that they allowed me and Mike to be in there as they were talking about it. As they were talking about it, I could look at Mike and I saw all the love he had of tag team wrestling, because when it's done right, tag team wrestling is beautiful. It's beautiful. It's truly pure because it tells stories with so many people. And it's the same destination. It's always destination that's the same, but getting there is always the fun part. And I looked at Mike, and I was like, "Man, we can do this," because I know he loves wrestling. I do too. So we just started talking, and I had the idea of being a gymnastic boy. But when I was talking to Mike, I was, this is too much money not to try to take this chance. And if it failed, we'll go back to singles. If he was a good singles wrestler, I was a good singles wrestler. But thankfully, we've been getting luckier and luckier, and we're in the conversations now of good tag teams. So I'll definitely be taking that. I'll take that any day.
And you guys are absolutely been killing it. You guys had a bunch of Mania bookings, didn't you? And you guys had all sorts of got stuff going on pretty much every weekend. I see you guys on a million different flyers. You're working three shows a week basically, and you're really making a go of this.
Yeah, before the whole quarantine took all of us out, WrestleMania weekend was looking to shape up to be pretty good for us. We had like 8 matches.
Oh, that's awesome.
All really, yeah. Considering that past four I've been to, I think I've had 3 or 4, and then being allowed to be in the same consideration with some of the best wrestlers and be on those shows, it was going to be a time to prove what me and Mike have been working for. And then for all that to happen, it sucked. It really sucked.
Yeah, it sucked for everybody because a lot of people were going to break out that weekend, and you guys were going to be one of them. But it's sort of going from here. I mean, have you been doing during the coronavirus break to sort of get ready? Because I know you want to hit the ground running.
I've actually just been working out. I changed my diet. I've worked. Me and Mike have been working like mad during this whole quarantine thing because during quarantine, it's more about self-reflection, and like, I reflected, and the past couple years, I wasn't ready. It's like me and Mike had the moves we had, the charisma we had, great matches with tag team, but at the end of the day, wrestling is still as much as it shouldn't be because talent should really reign over, but it's still a body image. So I felt like that's one of the things that held us back in some aspects or certain opportunities. We wanted to leave the quarantine giving nobody any excuses to say no to. And I feel like we're doing that. So now it's just being left on them to why aren't we going? Why aren't we, our names aren't being brought up in those meetings? Why aren't we being booked out here against your best when your fans are telling us or telling you that they want us there? Because it's no longer what we have to do. We're doing what we need to do. It's now on the promoters or the bookers or the agent or the big companies.
They have to tell you no.
Yes.
That you're doing the right thing. You're definitely doing the right thing. That's awesome. One thing that I wanted to bring up, and I want to get your perspective on things. One thing that's also been happening recently, and I think that you and Mike have been a shining example, because here's a white guy and an African-American guy who are best friends and working as a tag team, and there's obviously been racial tension, you know, in the world and in the country over the past few weeks. I want to get your opinion and, hear your thoughts and let you you use this forum to talk about what's been going on in the world the last few weeks and, you know, the last few years, and just talk about your thoughts on what's been happening, you know, obviously with the murder of George Floyd and, all the senseless police killings all over the God over the past few years or so. And just talk about what your thoughts have been, what's been going on.
First of all, thank you for letting me talk about that on your stage.
Oh, no, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
I feel like with everything that's happening now, it's opening eyes to people who are willing to see it. With change comes people. Don't think change happens. That's with everything, not just within life. This is in wrestling, too. You're seeing it. some of your biggest companies, your biggest stars are unfortunately showing what who they truly are. And it's unfortunate, but it's it needs to happen, because that hatred, that mindset, it should have never been in the world of wrestling, especially the world of wrestling, how this all started. Wrestling is supposed to be for everyone, but unfortunately, it's not been the case for a very, very long time. And now that's being exposed, a lot of people aren't liking that. And those people don't need to be in wrestling, don't need to be in society with that thinking, that mentality. It's like, we literally are fighting. Literally, people are dying just for us to have the same rights as them. And it's like, my grandmother's been fighting this. My great grandmother's been fighting this. I can't tell you how crazy it is to sit around a bunch of my friends, my white friends, and they're talking about life, they're talking about video games, they're talking about going to the beach, and I'm worried about if I'm going to make it out today a lot, and not want to say anything because I don't want to drag them down in my sorrows. And that's been the way, that's been that way for a very long time, 31 years. And 6 years, I've had to bite my tongue to people who I shouldn't have. My talent should have always spoken for me, but it hasn't. I've had to work 7 times as hard as the next wrestler, but yet they still get those opportunities. They mess up, they still get those opportunities. Out of 100 wrestlers, maybe seven black can get an opportunity. They only get one chance to mess up. And that's something that's never been fair to me, and it's always been the case, because there's been times when me and Michael's tagged and they'll break out a white mic chant. White mic's not even in the ring. And he'll try his best to, like, hey, what about Timmy Lou? Lou's my partner too. For some people, they don't care. They see who they want to see, because that's been the narrative for so long. The whole thing about Tuco Scorpio, the narrative has been he is good, but he is not good enough to wrestle or beat our heavyweights, and that's something that's never been right with me. Tuco Scorpio, Coco Beware, Tony Atlas, great wrestlers, great men, but yet, Jazz was a monster. She could rule any women's division she'd been in.
She could whoop any men's division she'd been in.
Anybody.
She'd get anyone's ass.
Plain and simple, this is erase sex out of this. Jazz does what Jazz wants to do. And you will say, yes, ma'am. But she was only give that platform a couple times. Only to play second best to whoever was the star at that time. And that's always been the case for every black wrestler that I saw on TV. I'm going to give you the perfect example of why a narrative doesn't paint a person. Shad Gaspard was a man. He wasn't someone that was on WWE, an ex-WWE wrestler. No, he was a man. I was blessed enough for him to come to me and Mike last WrestleMania, WrestleCade weekend in North Carolina. He came, we just got finished wrestling one of our matches. He came to me and him at our table and talked to us as human beings, not as someone that was doing us a favor. He didn't owe us anything. He didn't know us. He didn't have to come to us or say anything. But he did. He came to us and said, you guys have it. You guys have all of it. You guys just need to work on your weight. If you guys work on your weight, nobody can say no to you. And he, and that's stuck in my head ever since. Because when I tell you, he has been to the top. He has been to the, he has been at the holy grail of this business. He has seen it all. He's done, he's wrestled in Japan. He's wrestled some of the best wrestlers. For him to come to us and talk to us as human beings, not on some, hey, this is me and Ford. This is some, oh, I'm doing you guys favors. No, this is a man that wanted to see us strive, that wanted to see me, and not just me, but Mike, strive and be better. He had messaged me the day he was at the beach.
Oh, man.
Because I had asked him for a workout routine, and he sent me one.
Oh, man.
I cried hard. I cried hard, just as when I found out Eddie Guerrero passed. Because Eddie Guerrero is my favorite wrestler. Shad Gaspard was my favorite man.
He died a hero.
He died a hero. I'm tearing up now. He said, "Save my son."
Yeah. He said, "Take my son." You know, the act of selflessness that man did in his final act was, I mean, how many people would do that? You know, unbelievable, unbelievable. What an absolute hero! They should build that man a statue.
Yes, they should. And it's stuff like that. Him, he surpassed former WWE wrestler, former WWE superstar. And that's what is a crip, that's a crime in this wrestling business. The narrators will have you think Jack Gaspard was just a tag team wrestler. He was much more than that. And that's what has to change. There are guys and women and people in the LGBT community that are so much more than just fillers or just, oh, hey, we need someone to be in this role so we don't get discriminated against. They can be your front runners. They can be your superstars. They can be your champion. We can do everything that you imagine we can do besides flip and jump high and be athletic. We are storytellers too. We can invoke emotions too. More so because we know that hurt. We know that pain. All we need is a champ. And people don't. And it took a man dying. It took a man losing his life for these conversations to open. And it's been happening. It's not just that. It's been going on for years. And I understand there's people that don't like me anymore because I'm vocal about it. I bit my tongue for so long. And for the respect to get opportunities to get a chance to wrestle at a big company. And the 6 years, I got extra work here and there, but nothing to where I could prove myself, nothing where I could show that I'm more than a stereotype. So now I'm going to be very vocal about what I can do, about what my brothers can do, what my brothers and sisters can do. And if people don't like it, I don't care. I was respectful. I'm still going to be respectful about it. I'm just going to be more upfront about how good me, my brothers, my sisters, what we can do, what we can provide, because we can provide a lot, a hell of a lot.
What do you think of what's going on in cities across the country right now with the protests and things like that?
I think it's necessary. I think it's very necessary because this country was founded about what they're doing. And the people that are complaining about it are being naive or don't want to hear. Because you can easily Google the history of America. I've had to Google history because I was never taught it. And it's very accessible to everybody. So if you don't want, you won't speak out it, you will hear me, you will hear people talk about it until it changes. People don't want to hear because it's no longer safe for them. And I've been unsafe for a long time, so we can be even on that playfield.
Now, you're in the South. Do you feel unsafe? Because, I mean, I'm in the South. I'm of a very liberal political belief. I'll just, you know, I talk about that very openly, and I don't get along with many of my neighbors and people around me, and I'm not even black, so I can't even imagine what you're going through, you know, in North Carolina, the state of Jesse Helms, you know, you grew up with. How is that? Do you feel unsafe?
I'm scared to leave the house. I go to the grocery store, I go work out, and I'm scared because at any time I could be taken out, and there's no repercussion of that. There's no due process with me. I'm guilty the second they see me. They don't, like, I'm scared that they won't ask for my ID. They won't ask. And here's the scary part. I've worked so hard to have a reputation of being a good person and being a human being. I can't tell them, oh, hey, I'm professional wrestler Timmy Lou Retton. I've wrestled in Canada. I've brought smiles to people's faces. I've created memories. No, the second they see me, I'm dangerous. And that's something I can never wrap my head around, that I'm dangerous. I'm far from it. But yet, the narrative of this country painted me such.
So where do you think we go from here, Timmy?
I feel like we go to where people don't want to go. I don't want to go there. But like I said, this country was founded by bloodshed. And I don't want bloodshed to happen. But I feel like that's going to have to be the way to get things done.
Interesting.
Not in the sense of hurting people or bloodshed. It's bloodshed of businesses, because that's where the money is. That's where the pain is. Like, if you take money from them, you take money out of these businesses who are all of a sudden now caring about Black Lives, or making these Black Lives Matter shirt to sell at their stores. Once we take away from them the money, that's when change shows. And I'm not talking about just in the world we're living in now, just in wrestling. If you find places that don't support your favorite wrestler or a certain group of wrestlers or community of wrestlers, don't support them. Because once you take money from them, that's where it starts to show.
So support. So what we can do to help, basically, is support those that are supporting everybody and supporting Black Lives. And
yes.
What else can we do to help? Me, you know, big fat white guy. What can I do to help?
Research. Do research. Find places that you can read and understand our history, not just Black history, the LGBTQ community, because they're fighting a war too. they had their damn insurance taken from them because they're not considered equal. It's so many things that people, that we all need to do, not just in this time right now, just in general. Be kind to each other. We're all fighting this. We still have coronavirus. There are people are dying from there. People getting shot. There's no need for anger. There's no need for, oh, I'm still better than you. No, no one's better than anybody. The coronavirus killed all of that. We're all sitting home right now. From Jay-Z to a kid to me, we're all sitting home. No one's a superstar. No one's this. So I only hope coming out of this that we treat people fairly. We treat people the same as they want to be treated. With finding things that they don't know the history of. Learning. I'm getting frustrated because I think about this all the time. Look up people that are great influence. There's Lockhart. There's Lockhart is my absolute hero. He pushes the envelope. He lets people know what's going on constantly. And he's been doing this before everything broke out. He's always made people aware of women's rights, black women's rights, black trans women's rights. And he's just a shining light, and he's ahead of his time. He is. I love him with all my heart. And he helps me learn things that I wouldn't have learned, I didn't know about. Constantly.
Paris Lockhart.
Darius Lockhart.
Darius Lockhart. Oh, yeah. Darius is a hell of, I mean, he's coming up with brilliant stuff on Twitter every day, and he's a great wrestler, too.
Just a beautiful human. Before any, like, before wrestler, before activist, he's a human. He's a beautiful human, and I thank God for him. As well as Suge Dunkerton. He's helped me during a lot of times where I thought I wasn't going to make it. He's literally my uncle in wrestling. He'll call me, check on me, see how I'm doing, giving me things to read so I'm not, my mind's not honestly worrying.
Go for it.
Finding people that are for you is very vital in this life. People that want to see you happy, people that fight to see. So I feel like that's a good thing too. Finding people that are for you. I don't know if I'm going everywhere. My mind's everywhere right now.
You're making sense. You're making complete sense.
Learn how to detach from things sometimes because this is a lot. Everything happening right now is a lot. Learning things, unlearning things, turning every stone. I had to watch myself one day because I felt myself almost attacking people that didn't deserve to be attacked. Because my guard is too high. Because, like, right now, just a weird time for everybody. Especially people are being, the ones that are being killed for nothing.
So, Timmy, from here, getting back on the ground running, getting back into wrestling, what's your plan?
My plans for me and Mike, basically just continue what we're doing. Not continue what we're doing. To basically come back better. If you look at the history of guys that showed their progress to evolve, their manifestation, essentially, you could see it. You could see how they walk, how they talk, how they presented themselves inside the ring and outside the ring. That's what we are preparing ourselves for. We're not coming back as a gymnasty boy, coming back as GNB. Dangerous, hungrier, ready to knock heads off, because we've been doing this for years and people's been taking us for jokes for years. And it's like, that's cool and all. That's how we got our foot in the door. But now, like, we're ready to show you what we can do. Me and Mike want to go to Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. We want to wrestle for the tag team titles. We want to wrestle for in the UK. We want to wrestle in Canada. We want to wrestle in Japan. We want to wrestle any company. That's it, any company. Me single, I want to show what I can do. Because I'm not going to lie, I had a lot of excuses holding me back. I no longer have those excuses. So I'm ready to show everybody what Timmy Lou Record can do as singles as well as tag. Because if you love me as tag, you're going to be remembered what I can do as a singles brother.
So where does that start? Where's your first booking?
My first booking is in North Carolina. It's an undisclosed place because it's mostly for charity. It's called What Truly Matters. It'll be streamed Facebook Live July 4th.
Cool.
All proceeds will be donated to the Equal Justice Initiative.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And a lot of these promotions are doing some really good stuff for some groups that really matter. And
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
That is very good. My only thing is, I need those same promotions to keep that same energy way past all this is over. Way past people think this is just a fad, because that's what people that falls all the time. Oh, we'll have a couple people here for a couple of shows, and then when it all dies down, then it's back to usual. There's no usual, there's no normal anymore. The spectrum of what wrestling was in life has changed, is altered. So I need that to be the same thing with these promotions. And thankfully, people are holding them accountable now. So I'm very happy that they're doing this. It's great, but they've had time to do that a while ago.
Sure thing. Well, Timmy, how do people contact you? How do people get in touch with you? How do people book you?
Everything, Timmy Lou Retton on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Black People Meet, MySpace. I'm kidding on MySpace. If you're interested in booking me and Mike, fcgm.1988@gmail.com, or you can hit our inbox up. They're open.
And I can vouch you guys are a skilled tag team. You're a fun tag team. You can pretty much bring all the dimensions of a wrestling match that any promoter is looking for. You guys can bring, you know, the whole package to a wrestling show. And we'll give a fan's bang for their buck, you know, with the GNB match, because you guys are definitely worth it. You're definitely worth it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. And this is Timmy Lou Retton, and definitely one to look out for on the scene.
Hi, Mom.
On the Place Be Nation Wrestling Network, Chris Delner and Devin Hales have your 2020 Backlash Reaction Show. Another of the newest shows on the feed is Wrestling's Chicken Salad, where Ben Locke, this time joined by Logan Crossland and Sean Kidd, go over the myriad of perceived bad pay-per-views in wrestling history. The debut episode recaps the 91 Great American Bash. On the latest NWA Saturday special, Scott and Dr. G are joined by Callum McDougall to begin a series of NWA's Mount Rushmore with a discussion on Harley Race. We have a new show on the feed, Highway to the Impact Zone. Logan Crossland and Jacob Williams start the Impact era of TNA with guests Sean Kidd and Lewis Maynard for the Maiden Flight, looking at the last weekly pay-per-view of the pre-Impact era, number 97. God, 18 years of Impact. Can you fucking imagine? The newest senior video has Rory and Callum McDougal go over the epic Rampage 92 from beginning to end. Check out the Pop feed with great shows that include the Glenn Butler Hour, Podcast Hour Spectacular. God, I always fuck that up. Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, A Piece of the Action, and so much more. Check out the Jenny Position feed, Home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Brother Sister Rewatch, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. Check out the new North-South Connection, my favorite new feed, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home for Wrestling, Warzone, No Holds Barred, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and more. We kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have till New Year's Eve to do your research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCWmatches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the greatest junk food of all time tournament has begun. Remember to vote every day. Be sure to check out PlaceMination.com. We have new voices and fresh takes on articles in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. Don't forget about Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web as well. And if you're doing online shopping at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of PlaceMination.com or use PlaceMination.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps us out with no cost to you. Welcome to the Row 1, Seat 1 podcast. This is Ben, a.k.a. Boston Nuga. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to highlight some young African-American wrestlers on the scene. And one of the people I've gotten to know over the last few years who is one of the more engaging people I've met in my travels in independent wrestling is a young wrestler out of Alabama named Lutha X. Lutha, welcome to the show.
Benny, what's going on, man?
What's up, brother? Man, I haven't wanted to have you on the show, and it keeps on getting to be a better time and a better time because, A, your talent just keeps on coming through, but B, time right now is very interesting to have someone with your life experience and your gimmick, too. To be on a show like this. But first of all, tell me what it was like coming up. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles.
Oh, California. Did you really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in L.A. And, I remember those L.A. riots. I was alive then. I was young, but I remember those vividly. And just the tension in the air, it's very similar to what's going on now across the states, across the nation.
So growing up in L.A., what was your exposure to wrestling?
So I had an uncle. He was very fond of wrestling. He kind of gave me that introduction to it and the Hulk Hogan Macho Man. But I always liked the Model Rick Martel. That was my guy.
Really?
Yeah. Whenever he came out, man, I popped. And, they'd always tell me, no, you got to like the Ultimate Warrior. You got to like Hulk Hogan. And I'm like, no, I kind of like this guy.
Well, it's because you're a beautiful man, Lutha. That's why.
Thank you, Biddy. I'm sorry.
So growing up was, in Los Angeles too, was wrestling kind of discouraged in your family, in your social group? Was it something that, you kind of hid, or was it something out in the open that was kind of cool? What was it like to be a wrestling fan?
So no one in my family cared much for it, except my uncle. He was the only one. So whenever Monday Night Raw came on or some of the Saturday Night Main Event shows, I couldn't watch it at my house because it's like, okay, we're not watching wrestling. It's stupid. I'd go to my uncle's house to catch up, and he'd also record it. So I was able to use the VCR to, it's an ancient device these days, but to catch up on these, man. And
I burned through mine.
He used to get the magazines and stuff, and I'd go through all that just to try to get as much as I could as far as content,
So you went through school. Now, one very interesting thing about you is you're a military man. Did you grow up with military in your family?
No, I am the only one to actually go through the Army and actually to finish high school.
Interesting.
College, all of that good stuff, To leave the urban environment, quote unquote, I hate to say this term, but like the hood in general, I'm very fortunate to be the first one in my family to do that. So,
at what age did you enter the Army?
I joined at 20.
Did you?
Yeah. So I went to high school in Las Vegas. a little bit out of LA, like 2 hours or so. And I went up there to live with my uncle, actually, to get away. The same uncle that introduced me to wrestling. He's been like a father to me. So I went there to stay with him because I was getting in some trouble. Did high school. I worked a little bit. And, you know, I was like, I'm not doing anything. And I just wanted to, I don't know. I don't know what made me want to join or what was it, but I wanted to be an airborne ranger. I always thought that that was like really cool. And so I joined and I did that.
So tell a little bit about your experience in the Army. Thank you, first of all, for serving. And what was your experience like? How long did you serve?
So I served for 12 years. And like I said, I wanted to be an airborne ranger. So when I initially joined, I went to the processing station where they recruit you. You know, I told the recruiter, I'm all in. I want to be an airborne ranger. So he looked at me kind of crazy because him being in the Army, he realizes, you know, what that takes and what that really means. And, you know, me just not knowing the intricacies and how difficult that was. And he's like, okay, he's going to do his job and get me in regardless. So I joined out of Vegas and I went down to Fort Benning in Georgia and did some training there and basic training. My airborne school was there. You know, they teach you how to jump out of planes because you have to be a ranger, you have to be airborne qualified. You
got
to
jump out of a plane, yeah.
You have to be, you have to jump out of planes, combat ready, things like jumping, things like that. So I did 2 weeks of that and then I went to ranger school. Initially, it was ranger in processing. You do 3 weeks there. And that's hell, man. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. They beat the crap out of you mentally, physically. Oh. You know, they want to weed out the guys who aren't supposed to be there. You know, it's a very elite unit. And I survived and I made it. And I went to ranger school, which that school is 3 months. So you get beat down even more, but it isn't, you're in a team now. It's not just an individual thing. So, you know, I'm really proud of that. And the 12 years that I served in a couple of ranger units, and then I got out and did two special operations units because I realized that there's more to the Army than just being a ranger. There's other echelons, there's other, like, hierarchies, if you will.
So you did special ops. You were an Army Ranger, and you did special ops.
So, yeah, I'm an Army Ranger, but I did not get my Green Beret. I'm not a Special Forces soldier. I just was attached to those guys. Because they have, like, in their units, it's difficult to break down, but they have other types of jobs, right, because they also need support, too. Mm-hmm. So they want Rangers to join with them because, you know, it's easier than a regular soldier. A Ranger's more tactical, I guess. So I fit right in that kind of world because I was used to that world. So I did about 6 years of that special operations job, and I was at 12, man, and I realized, you know, at this point I was married, I had 3 kids at the time, and I realized, like, okay, you know, I'm 30 now, and this isn't kind of what I want to do. Like, I'm tired of fighting. I'm you know, the deployments is wearing on my marriage. This is even before the wrestling, Benny. So I realized I had to make a decision. Like, okay, first of all, I have all these certifications, so I can get out and go make some pretty good money, or I can stay in and keep doing what I love, but I miss time with my family. So I got out, you know.
How many deployments did you serve?
I had 3 traditional deployments, in a sense. Traditional deployments meaning over 12 months. I also have, like, maybe 10 or 11 clandestine deployments, or maybe non-traditional, where you'll just do a month, 3 months, things like that.
Oh, jeez. That has to be hell on a family. Yeah.
Yeah, the regular deployments, you know, those are brutal. But the ones that really were the toll, man, is the ones that were shorter because you have an objective. Mm-hmm. The deployments, you're going to go, you're going to do what you got to do, whatever that may be, and you're going to come home. There's no
set plan on it. Yeah.
Those are a little more dangerous, I guess you can say.
Sure.
And, you know, she knew that, and, you know, those were more stressful. So,
oh, man, thank you. So you got out after 12 years, you served your time, you did amazing work. From there, you still have the wrestling bug.
Yes, I always followed it throughout my life, man. And you know, as a wrestling fan, even while deployed, because they have the Army has a network called AFN, while you're overseas, and it's free, and they pretty much offer all the channels for all the soldiers. So I never had a chance. I never missed wrestling. It was always, I can catch it, you know, Raw, SmackDown.
That's cool to know.
Yeah, you know, at the time, TNA was really popular, and I didn't miss anything, man.
So where do you you know, where does someone who, you know, who has army training, what is army training compared to wrestling training? What is your wrestling training story like?
So the discipline is the one thing that I think helped with my training and me being trained so fast, and I was already athletic. So the transition wasn't so bad. And of course the respect is there. Like, I respect my trainer's carry. Like, he was a sergeant. If I take that approach to it, I think that, you know, I think that that's worked.
And this is a Crux Wrestling school in Tennessee.
Yes, yes. I was trained there. That approach kind of works more. And also just being, what's the word here? It was difficult in a sense of bumping, you know, when you realize it. But when you realize that when you're in there, it's not the same as on TV, like, obviously, right? But it's fun.
Now, your character, I mean, you play a proud, take-no-bullshit, militant black man. Did you come up with that? Is that part of you? Talk about your character, because Luther X is one of my favorite characters on the indies.
Man, really? Really? I appreciate that.
No, seriously. I've told you before, you have your character down.
Right, right. So my grandfather's name is Luther, and he was a Black Panther in Los Angeles in the 60s and 70s. I recently did I recorded him just talking about his experiences and, you know, what he had to go through in those days, and when California was becoming more of like a territory with the gangs. You know, there wasn't necessarily Bloods and Crips, but it was just different. So I took his first name. His name was Luther, but I made it Luther. And I took a couple of his things that he wore that I wore to the ring. It's like a little homage to him. So it isn't necessarily a gimmick, if you will. You know, I kind of believe those things. You know, I'm not pro-black in a sense at all, but I just know that there is a lot of injustice. So I take this persona.
Yeah, persona. I'm sorry, I didn't mean gimmick. I didn't mean that as it's like, yeah. But it's one of my favorite characters, and right. One of my favorite personas on the indies, because it's identifiable and solid, and it's just proud, and it's great.
I appreciate that, man. And sometimes I may take it and do a little Memphis with it, you know, a little silly things, depending. But I still keep that attitude, regardless of where I'm wrestling that night. You know, the roots of that does not change.
Now, you happen to be wrestling in the South. You know, you noticed. And you're wrestling some of these smaller crowds sometimes. What have you encountered? Could be comical, could be sad, could be heartening for some of these crowds.
I've seen the worst and I've seen the best. From the worst, meaning that I've been called the N-word with the hard ER, you know, and I've been told to go back to Africa, to go back to where I came from, and, you know, those type of things. And I've also been embraced by almost the same people, or just different people in general that are from that type of traditional mindset. You know, they embrace Luther. They love it. Like, they understand. There's kids who come up to me and, you know, they're engulfed with the character. But it's I've seen both sides of that spectrum, man, the love and the hate.
Yeah, I've been at crowds that you've been at, and you're very good at playing up being loved and playing at being hated as well. You're very good at embracing both sides.
Yeah, yeah. You have to. You have to be multifaceted. You know, you can't be one dimensional. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I know where I'm at, especially in Alabama. Like, good Lord, I'm here. But I understand that. So why not embrace that? You know, and just understand it.
Yeah, I've seen you. I remember I one show. You came to TWE in Tennessee, and you were playing it up a little bit too. But you were definitely the bad guy. You were getting booted out of the building, and I just looked at you and I said, "But I'm down, right?" And you said, "Yeah, no, you're down. It's cool."
We did the fist bump. People got mad at you.
Didn't care. Did not care.
But that's what it's about, man. You know,
but that was a little wink. But like, you know, like you're when you play heel, it's so good. It's so good. You know, especially these little crowds in the South. It just it tickles me. It just. I absolutely love it, but when you're around people who are a little more advanced, shall we say, you know, right. You play babyface and it's so good too.
Right. I like the progressive crowds too. Mm-hmm. If I can go there and they see Luther as a Rage Against the Machine type of character of bucking the system, you know. And that's cool. That's a good dynamic.
Do you enjoy playing one more than the other?
I enjoy being a heel.
Really?
I enjoy pissing people off. I remember, you know, this one particular night, and I think it was in Knoxville, and this was just recently. I was like, yeah, this was. Yeah, this lady. Bigger lady, man. She was, you know, I don't fat sham. I don't feel like I need to, you know, to get heat. That's just. There's other ways of going around that, right? And I don't know what I said to her. I don't remember verbatim what I said to him, but she was like spit a fire out of her mouth, calling me just all kind of like N-words and dropping these all these bombs and MFers, and I'm just like, yeah. Everything else. It's infected like that, you know?
Now, you said recently you actually work shows since the pandemic has hit, in the last couple of weeks?
Since everything was clear, when the pandemic was pretty strong on and everything was canceled, I did not work anywhere. The stupidity of doing that, risking that with my family, you know?
Well, of course, yeah. But, like, shows have opened in the last 2 or 3 weeks or so, at least in Tennessee and Georgia, and you actually work a couple of shows, correct?
Yes, so 2 weeks now since everything has been lifted in Tennessee, I've been on shows.
What have those been like? Because people in the audience probably want to know, what have shows been like post or I guess semi post pandemic, because they have to be completely different.
Benny, the shows that I've been at have been the same. There has been really? No. There's been no changes. No one's wearing masks. It's crap, man. And I remember at SWF recently, you know, Jack gave all the boys a little speech, and you know, he wanted us to not touch hands. He wanted us to be precautious, you know. And the fans may want to touch you, but just don't walk to the ring. You know, do what you got to do. Entertainment, embrace them, acknowledge them, but don't touch them. And man, the first match out, guys were going out there and high fiving everybody. Running around giving everybody hugs. I'm like, well, that's out the window, Jack. And he just shook his head, man.
Shit. Some people are not going to learn.
No, they're not.
I'm hoping, because I'm going to GCW this weekend, and I'm hoping that it'll be a little smarter. Yeah. I hope. I really, really, really hope.
Yeah. I mean, some you may find some people with their mask and whatnot, but outside of that, man. Just today we're gonna get hardcore, so.
Shit. Anyways, I just wondered what shows were like, because this is. Things should be different. They really should be.
Right. But they're not.
Not in Tullahoma.
I was in Knoxville that Thursday, like I said, and that was the same. I was in McMinnville, Tennessee, Saturday, and that was no different either, so.
Wow, that makes me cringe a lot. Anyway, so back to your career. Where are some of the other places you've had a chance to work? Because I remember one match that really stuck out to me was a match you had with AJ Gray at a Crux show that was, in my opinion, your coming out party.
Really?
Oh, completely. Completely. And I think people would agree with that, too. Completely. And you really started to get your name out there to the point where you were highlighted this past week as one of the young African American wrestlers to look out for in 2020 and beyond. I don't know if you got a chance to see that on IWTV when they did the mixtape on Thursday.
Oh yeah, and Jay Rowland, shout out. I love him so much. Thank you for that.
Well, he meant that, dude, because you're one of the guys to watch. You're looking out for Rookie of the Year here.
I appreciate that, man.
It's truth.
Not the Jax Dane match, but the Crux match. That's to you. That stands out more.
The AJ, you killed it in the AJ match. The Jax Dane match was fun too, but the AJ match was more hard hitting to me.
Oh,
because y'all beat the crap out of each other. The Jax Dane match was fun for like character reasons, but right. You and AJ beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah, that was real physical, and that wasn't, you know, not meant to be that way, but he wanted to see if I could hang. And he pushed me to that point, and I had a lot of fun, but it was hard. It was rough.
And you could hang.
Yeah, yeah. I hung in there. I lost the match, but I hung in there, you know.
Against AJ Gray, who's one of the top five guys on the indies right now, and you hung.
That's true. That's true.
Just saying. Watch out for Luther X. So who are the – you worked Jax Dane, you worked AJ Gray. Who are some of the other guys you had a chance to work that you're really, really proud of being able to work?
I really had a good time with when I wrestled with my trainer, Kerry. We had a
– Kerry Awful.
Yeah, Kerry Awful. Mm-hmm. We had a really, really good match, and it was my – that was my 10th match, I believe, so far in the business, man. And I think – I felt like that match I grew so much because, you know, we weren't training anymore. We were in front of a crowd, and – he gave me the old school, I'll see you out there, kid. And I'm like, oh, crap, you know? What are we going to do? What's going to happen? Okay, we're going to do everything out there. Like, okay, fine, let's do it. So, you know, the nerves, and that was a very important match to me. Also, I'm really proud of a match I had at Rocket City down here in Alabama, and also a match I had in New South when I wrestled Cabana Man Dan. I felt like that was a really good match. Guy like Dan, man, who's been doing this for some time now, and for him to give me that spotlight, he requested that match from me, so I felt good about that match too, you know.
And Dan's another one, top 10, top 15 guy in the indies, and you hung with him.
Yeah, I was really proud of that match, and there was a match I had at Rocket City with a guy named Nick Tramer. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, Nick's a good wrestler.
Yeah, we had a really, really good match. One of those matches where you just sit back and, you know, it translates well live, but it also translates well when you watch it again. You know, it's one of those type of matches. But,
and you've worked SUP, you've worked SCI.
Yeah, I've worked the SCI shows. The Cindy City Tank Throwdown. I didn't have a chance to work SUP in a singles match. I did a Battle Royal there, but still, nonetheless, like I want SUP is like one of my bucket list shows, man. So whenever they start running back again, if I can get back there, I'll probably cry. Be so happy, you know.
So yeah, this is a guy on the up and up. Luther X was definitely one to watch. So kind of switching gears a little bit, I want to have you on as well because you're one of the smarter people I know in wrestling, and you have I wanted to give your opinions on what's been going on recently. With the murder of George Floyd, with everything going on in the country, I wanted to give you a forum to really talk about what your experience has been, especially as someone who is in the military, who's seen things from a lot of sides, what your experience has been as an African-American man, coming up in L.A. especially, too, what you're seeing now. Just talk away. This is your forum.
Well, Benny, thank you. For giving me the platform, man, to even discuss this. I feel like I do have a noteworthy perspective to voice my opinion on the situation because I've traveled the world. I've been to almost every continent. I've been to places where the black man is not treated the same as he is in America. I've been to places where when you are black, you're not, the pressure of being a black man is not as strong as it is here, you know. When you go to the Philippines and you see these monuments and these cathedrals and churches, not churches, they don't have churches there, but just the places that they worship, there are black martyrs and black statues and the paintings, you know? So when you see all these things and I've been to Germany where it's like the women love black fans, you know. So having that perspective and being, and also another thing, when I've been to Afghanistan, my first time there, I was a young man. The tribe leader there would not speak to my commander, who was a white man. He wanted to speak to me only. So he pulled me aside, and my interpreter at the time, our interpreter rather, would talk to me with the tribe leader. And I'd have to go back to my commander and tell him what's going on. And just because they treat us as like cousins, that's what they say, you know, their word for it in Tagalog. I don't remember the verbatim, it's been a while, but it means cousin. And I mention all of this because when you come back here as a black man, the only thing that you are, I guess, noteworthy for, not noteworthy, but just the slavery aspect. And I hate that. I hate that so much. And when you look at when Obama was in the office for those 8 years, you know, every year there was a new slave movie, box office, not just an indie movie, but there was a major movie of a rendition or a remake of some type of oppressed movie. And I thought to this, you know, subliminally, subconsciously, you know, why is that? You know, why do we have to keep remembering those things when we're trying to progress? We have a black man in the highest office in the land. Why are we worried about slave movies? And I thought about it, you know, and I was like, that makes sense, you know, letting us know that no matter how high you climb in America, this is always where you came from. When I think of George Floyd and all the other most recent black people that are dying, technology has made this prominent now, because this has always happened. This has always been going on. You can ask a wrestler, a black wrestler, you can point him out in the crowd, and you know, he'll give you an experience of dealing with the police that was not hostile type of situation. White guys too, obviously, but we're talking about the black perspective. This has always been going on. Now technology and our cell phones has made it so that the awareness is now there. And I don't know what sparked it with George Floyd. Maybe people were just tired of it. I don't know what set this off so bad, because like I said, this has been happening. We've always given awareness to it, and you know, we tweeted about it, and we prayed about it, and we spoke on it. But this was, I guess, enough. And you know, it's continuing to still happen now after he's died. But when I think about it as a black man, it hurts. And I know that, or at least I don't feel that it won't, maybe not in my lifetime, there won't be a resolution. Because my grandpa, who I spoke of, you know, he had it harder than us in his time growing up with the police and their mistreatment of black people. And their resolution was just now being accepted today. And I don't think that, well, there's just going to be, there has to be a change. There has to be some type of resolution. I hope that I get to see it for my kids' sake. I hope that it's somehow changed, but I don't think America wants that, you know? I don't think that, yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm hoping this brings about change as well. I mean, it sucks that it came to that. It really sucks that it came to that. It should have. But what do you think about what's been happening in cities across the country? I had someone on earlier who said it's necessary and they think it's going to get worse. Do you agree?
Yeah, it is. It's going to get worse. Only because the opposition, COINTELPRO, they will start to want to put their hand in a cookie jar, if you will. And you know, the police reform and just the aggression, it's going to get hot. It's going to heat up more. It's going to get worse, because now I think that the message is lost. When we first started to protest, it was protest, it was peaceful, and all of a sudden, you know, there's riots, and it's from a different perspective, a different mindset. People who were pent up from from quarantining for 2-3 months, losing their jobs, you know, losing all this financial gain that they had. They had all this pent up energy and aggression. And this was just the spark that set everything off. And now it's just rioting in the streets because people are mad. You know, people do not, they don't want to talk. They want to act. So I hope that things don't get worse, but on a military perspective, when I think of the tactical side of it and the strategic side of it, there is no leader, you know, a good general, a good sergeant to lead his troops, his soldiers, man or woman, with a plan of action, you know, and to see that plan and have stages in that plan. And there is no plan of action for us. And I think that leadership is one thing that we're missing. If we want to get our point across, we need someone that's going to be vocal for us, that speaks for us, because everyone can't speak for everyone. There's different perspectives, there's different meanings. We need someone that can facilitate that and funnel all of that energy and make all that negative energy positive, you know?
I am completely with you there. Yeah, there is a definite lack of leadership. definitely lack of leadership at the top there.
You know, when you mentioned MLK, when you mentioned Marcus Garvey, when you mentioned Malcolm X, when you mentioned most recently, there's some other black leaders that are out there. I can't say that there is no leadership, because there is, but there is just not being heard because they're not accepted. They're not, I don't know what's the word to use there, but it just isn't where it needs to be. You know, there is no prominent leader we have.
So what can we do? What can I do sitting in my couch here? You know, what can people who are listening to the show do? How can we help?
The same thing you've been doing, Benny, because I follow you and I see that, you know, I see your retweets. I see what you like on Twitter and Facebook. You know, I see what you post. Those little things go so far in having an alliance. You know, as an Italian man, you've had some type of discrimination also, you know, and
not nearly what you've had to face, man.
Right. It may not be black discrimination, but you've had it. So you can speak on that. You know, everyone's been discriminated in this thing. But the retweets, man, and the shares and all of that stuff, it goes so far as algorithms are concerned, because people are not going to start to see those things. And if you look at, for instance, you know, Facebook, when we see the people who are not necessarily racist, but they believe in their flag and, you know, all this Confederacy stuff, that's all algorithms. It's all, we're all seeing all of that and weeding out who we need to get out of here. They had every right to love their flag, and I'm going on a tangent here. But, you know, it's, they have every right. I fought for that right, you know, every right to love that. But it's more than that. You know, when you see that, it's more than just a heritage. It's almost a borderline of a racism. So like you said, I think that is the way to help. The retweets and the shares, man, and speaking on it and talking about it. You know, when you see something, you comment on it, things like that. You know, I don't think that having boots on the ground is important. Boots on the ground meaning going out there and marching and protesting, that is important. But so is the infrastructure of technology, because it is so prominent now, and it is so, you can reach more people through Twitter, through Instagram, through Facebook, by the retweets and shares, than you can going out to your city and protesting and marching. It's important, but it isn't as important as the digital importance of it. Does that make sense?
No, you're totally right. That's right. I never thought of it that way, but you're totally right.
Mm-hmm. You can't think conventional anymore. In terms of war, the conventional side of war is gone. America will never send thousands of troops and tanks and armors to another country. It's too expensive. It's not efficient. They will send tactical soldiers, units of special operations guys first, and guerrilla warfare and underground conventional warfare. That's what America's is, because no country can attack us from the outside, right? We're too powerful. You have to destroy it from within. And that's what's happening now. And I don't, when you go out there and you march and you protest, that's boots on ground. It's important, but it's not reaching.
It's good to know. So, Luther, how can people reach you? How can people get in contact with you if they want to book you, if they just want to talk to you, they want to bring you on? How can people get in touch with you?
So, my Twitter is xLutherX, and so is my Facebook, and also my Instagram is just LutherX. You can at me there. I've always taken the approach, and I've always was taught to go out and chase your bookings. Don't let the bookings come to you. That opportunity missed. So if there is a promoter that's listening to this that does want to, you know, reach out to me, by all means, but I'm pretty sure that I've probably reached out to the most possible can. So
well, Luther, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate it. We're all rooting for you, man.
Hey, man, I hope that was informative and we got some points across, man. I appreciate the platform letting me talk. I really do.
Thank you, man.